It is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins. Game over! Franco wins it!
He got it! He pulled it right out of the bushes!
Swing and a miss! He got him! And Aaron Nola leads two.
Swing and a miss! Struck him out!
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 288. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter, at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to recap a crazy Phillies-Cubs series here in Chicago at Wrigley Field with a finale on Thursday that was reminiscent of those wild Phillies-Cubs games that they used to play at windblown Wrigley Field when the wind was blowing out and you'd have scores where both teams were in the teens and there were crazy plays everywhere. And at the end of the day, at least this time around, the Phillies leave Chicago splitting a four-game series. So we're going to get into everything that went down in this crazy week, stuff with the bullpen, Gabe Kapler's pitching staff management, an up-and-down hot-and-cold offense, Vince Velasquez, the rotation, Nick Williams, all of that stuff coming up here. And I've got The Good Fight's Paul Boyer as my guest this week. We're going to talk about all things Phillies, and we'll also have your stat of the week. That's all coming up here on Hittin' Season. But before we get into the show, just a reminder that if you subscribe to The Good Fight podcast feed on Apple Podcasts and you haven't left a five-star review or given the show a rating or anything like that, if you wouldn't mind doing that, that would help us out a lot. That helps other Phillies fans find us and gets us moving up those Apple Podcast rankings. And for those of you who want some bonus content, some video content, some extra written content that you can't find at thegoodfight.com, also some bonus podcast material, go to our Hittin' Season Patreon. It's at patreon.com/hittin'season. Also, one other thing, on the Sunday night edition of the podcast that I'm going to do with Justin Clue and Liz Rocher coming up, if you have any questions you'd like to ask us or you want to leave us a comment about what you've seen so far here this season, you can call in the Hittin' Season hotline and leave a voicemail for us, and we'll play the best ones on the podcast. The number is 215-650-7270. Again, that's 215-650-7270. You can also get us by email. It's hittinseasonpodcast@gmail.com. All right, well, the Phillies have split the series with the Cubs in a game that was absolutely seizure-inducing on Thursday afternoon. They led 7-0 in this one early on, and then 8-3 after that, and barely held on by the skin of their teeth for a 9-7 win to earn the split. Hector Neris, as he does quite often, made it really, really nerve-wracking, and as it just made it a tough thing to watch. He gave up a run at holding a 9-6 lead. The Cubs had runners on second and third with one out after they had run out of position players, and Tyler Chatwood came to hit and actually laced an RBI double that gave the Cubs runners on second and third with one out. At that point, I thought for sure they were going to lose the game. It just felt like they were going to lose the game on Thursday after Tyler Chatwood, of all people, comes off the bench and smokes. I mean, it wasn't a blooper. He smoked a double over Andrew McCutchen's head in left field, but Hector Neris did an outstanding job getting the last two outs of the ball game, and the Phillies held on for an incredibly huge 9-7 win. McCutchen was a monster in this series. 7-for-16, 3 doubles, a home run, 5 RBIs, 4 runs scored. By the way, he currently has the 8th best Fangraphs wins above replacement among National League outfielders so far this year. The Phillies are now 29-1. They're up by a game and a half over Atlanta, who beat the San Francisco Giants on Thursday. They're up 4.5 games on the Mets and now 10 games up on the Washington Nationals. I think you can really start to throw some dirt on the Nationals' face, and we're going to talk about the state of the National League East coming up here in just a little while after the second half of the podcast. We'll get around to that. Within this Cup Series, obviously one of the big things that everybody is talking about, especially even after they won on Thursday, is Gabe Kapler's pitching staff management and the decisions that he's making as far as removing pitchers from games, knowing what reliever to go to, how long to leave that reliever in. And I know there's a lot of us that are kind of scratching our heads at the decisions that are made sometimes. Now, it all worked out today. But as we saw this week, when you use the bullpen the way Gabe Kapler did today and the way he has in previous games, it may mean that you don't win that game, but it also might mean that you're without your 4 best relief pitchers for a particular game, which is what we saw on Tuesday night when the Phillies were unable to hold a 2-1 lead and Juan Nicasio had to come in for the save and predictably gave up two runs, and the Phillies lost a heartbreaking crusher of a game on Tuesday night by the score of 3-2. They really should have won 3 out of 4 in this series. That, you know, you go into the ninth inning with a lead, you expect to win that ball game. You just do. And I know the Cubs have a great lineup, but throwing Juan Nicasio at them in the ninth inning of a one-run ball game was a recipe for disaster. And Gabe Kapler had no other choice but to do that. And we're going to get into some of those decisions in just a minute as far as what happened earlier in the week. As far as Thursday is concerned, what was really kind of concerning was that the Phillies had a pretty comfortable lead in the bottom of the sixth inning. An 8-3 lead with a runner on and one out. Aaron Nola pitching. He was under 100 pitches. I think he was at like 93 pitches or something like that. He did not have his good command today. He was a little bit up and down. We still have not seen locked in Aaron Nola for more than a start at a time. And he was not locked in today. He had his good his stuff was moving, but he wasn't able to control it. I think he had 4 walks in the game. And so Gabe Kapler took him out with Jason Hayward coming to the plate. Phillies holding a 5-run lead at the time, an 8-3 lead in the bottom of the sixth. Again, Nola was under 100 pitches. And Nola even said that he didn't think Kapler was coming to take him out. After the game, Nola said, "I thought I was staying in. I didn't know Gabe had already called to the bullpen." He said, "I felt like I could have stayed in. I felt good. I kind of expected to face Hayward right there. I felt like I just needed to execute a pitch and get a double play right there." But Kapler's explanation, and this was in the James Salisbury Gamer, he said, "No, I don't think Nola had his best command. He walked 4 batters. There was some hard contact in that inning and a near miss. It just felt like the right time to get Morgan in there." And then Kapler, understanding that we are criticizing moves like this, said, "Sure, Knowles, being who he is, could have gotten through that inning, but we don't have the ability to have the alternate universe and see what could have happened if we left Nola out there. These are the debates, the natural debates that happened after a game like this." And so after Nola was removed from the game, you had Adam Morgan facing just 2 batters. And then Sir Anthony Dominguez, he did not have his good stuff and walked a couple of guys, but he only faced a couple of batters. Pat Nashak, who has been a lightning rod for criticism this week, and we'll get into him in just a few minutes, was tagged for 3 runs, gave up a pair of home runs in the seventh inning. Jose Alvarez had a pretty decent outing, but then you had Neris for 1 out in the eighth inning and then for the entire ninth inning. And for those of you who think, you know, we're picking on Gabe Kapler, the media is picking on Gabe Kapler, this is not just us. Salisbury writes in his piece, "Kapler's management of the bullpen has come under fire lately, even in his own clubhouse. It's not ideal to use 5 relievers on a day you have a big lead with a big series against powerful Milwaukee looming." And that is 100% correct. And apparently, even in the clubhouse, Kapler is facing some questions over his pitching management. It's fair to wonder what's going on sometimes. You know, I think some of this is on Aaron Nola too, because he was up at around 93, 94 pitches in the sixth inning. When you're given a 7-0 lead and you finished third in the National League Cy Young Award voting last year, you're supposed to be the ace of the staff. It would have been nice to get 7 easy innings out of him. But he couldn't do that. And, you know, it's a little upsetting that Nola was not able to take a 7-0 lead and run away with it, like he would have done last year. Which tells me even more that he's still not 100% right. And, you know, who knows why? Were the innings that he pitched last year? Is he suffering some ill effects from a larger workload last year? I kind of doubt it because the stuff is still there. He just doesn't have that command that he had last season. And, you know, maybe last season was freakish with his command. Maybe it'll return. Who knows? But, you know, I thought it was too early in the game to start playing matchups with a bullpen that's clearly gassed and that has a tough road series coming up this week in Milwaukee against a Brewers team that took 3 out of 4 in convincing fashion from the Phillies in Philadelphia. I don't understand Adam Morgan getting just 2 batters in this game. Sir Anthony Dominguez, maybe he's just not as good as he looked to be when he was first called up last year. You know, maybe we have to accept this is what Sir Anthony Dominguez actually is. Kind of a guy with a great fastball, and when his cutter is working, a dominant cutter against left-handers, but a guy who has no ability to command anything. He couldn't throw strikes again today. I mean, we saw him have a great outing on Monday, and then And then Kapler decides to try and bring him back out for a second inning on purpose. And, you know, I wrote a piece for The Good Fight this week about it. They tried to do that 16 times with Sir Anthony Dominguez last year, where they bring him in for a second inning. And 12 out of the 16 times, he didn't give up a run. But four of those times, he gave up. He had disastrous second innings in which he contributed mightily to some catastrophic losses last season. I think it's just too risky, especially the way he's pitching this year, to use Sir Anthony Dominguez for more than one inning at a time. Wraparound innings are not these relievers' friends. And I wonder if maybe not having set roles is starting to factor in here. I think Hector Neris is the only one with a set role. He's the closer. And anybody who doesn't think the Phillies have a closer, they're not doing closer by committee. The Phillies have a closer. It's Hector Neris. This is not a closer by committee situation. Now, innings 6 through 8 are by committee, totally. And, you know, I think major league relievers should be able to handle that. You know, you want to have a setup guy and a closer guy. I think that does work best. I remember that 2008 bullpen when you had Scott Ayer was your left-handed reliever that would pitch the 6th, the 7th innings, or, you know, earlier in the game. And, you know, Chad Durbin was that guy. And then in the 7th and 8th innings, you had J.C. Romero was your left-handed reliever for more high-leverage situations. And Ryan Madsen was your setup guy. And Brad Lidge was your 9th inning guy. I mean, that's kind of, it's really nice when it all works like that. But the Phillies don't have anything like that right now. And Kapler said that they planned on Dominguez pitching more than one inning in the game on Monday. I just think, you know, there's so many questions about the pitching usage. I just think by burning through so many relievers in a game where you had a 5-run lead, you leave yourself open to the kind of situation that the Phillies faced on Tuesday when they had no Sir Anthony Dominguez, no Adam Morgan, no Hector Neris, and no Pat Neshek. And you were left with Juan Nicasio trying to close things down. And the other thing about Pat Neshek is we know that Neshek has refused to go into games in the past because he didn't feel right warming up. And this time around, it doesn't sound like that was the case. It doesn't sound like the case on Monday when he was warming up. And Gabe Kapler, after Sir Anthony Dominguez walked the leadoff hitter in his second inning of work, calling up to the bullpen, getting Neshek up, and they wanted Neshek a lot sooner than Neshek was ready to get in there. I can understand that. I don't blame Neshek for not being able to get in the game on Monday, because it doesn't sound like Kapler gave him enough time. But to be unavailable on Tuesday, when you didn't get into the game on Monday, and all you did was warm up, and you'd only appeared in 3 games since May 4th, I don't understand not being able to get into that game on Tuesday. And I know I'm going to take some heat from my fellow good fighters who have Pat Neshek's back on this one. I don't. I'm sorry. But here's the thing. They knew about this with Pat Neshek coming into the season. This is not new. They knew that he was finicky about warming up in the bullpen. And we know that major league teams have started to look at warming up in the bullpen like it was an actual appearance in a big league game. But that being said, when you are staring down the barrel of having to put Juan Nicasio in a save situation and Pat Neshek didn't pitch the night before, I don't understand how you don't go up to your manager and say, I want to get in the game, unless you're really feeling sore. I just don't understand it. But we don't know what's going on with Neshek and with Gabe Kapler. I will just say that the explanation Neshek gave and that Kapler gave and the whole situation smells funny to me. It just smells funny to me. I don't know what's going on there with Neshek. I wish I could hook up Kapler and Chris Young and the rest of the Phillies players to a lie detector test and ask them questions about Pat Neshek. I really do. I'd love to know what they actually think. Because I've never been a professional ball player. I didn't play college ball, so I won't presume to say that what Neshek is doing is necessarily the wrong thing. But I wonder how his teammates feel about it. I really, really do. But Neshek is an important part of this bullpen. He is a valuable member. The 2 home runs aside in the game on Thursday, he's a very good relief pitcher for the Phillies, and he has gotten some big outs for this team. It's a crying shame that he couldn't get any outs on Tuesday. And the other thing that you have to remember with Gabe Kapler here is they have lost David Robertson to the injured list. They've lost Victor Arano, Edobre Ramos, all to the injured list. Guys that were counted on to be important parts of this team, Tommy Hunter. I've never been a big Tommy Hunter fan, but they clearly needed him this year, and they haven't had any of those four guys. It has definitely left the bullpen short. Now, the bullpen had a great series against against Colorado. They did a great job shutting down the Colorado Rockies, but in this series, no lead was safe. The Cubs have a very good offense, and they showed it. They showed up. Anthony Rizzo showed up. Chris Bryant showed up. Javi Baez, when he played, showed up. Kyle Schwarber showed. Almonte showed. Almora showed up. Wilson Contreras. I mean, it's got a very, very good group of bats in Chicago. So a lot of pitching staffs are going to struggle. And for those of you who think the Phillies have just the worst bullpen imaginable, they have a bullpen ERA of 3.95 that is fourth best in the National League. The Phillies, according to ERA, have the fourth best bullpen in the National League. Now, I still think that means they should go after Craig Kimbrell. I think they should go after him now. I don't think they should wait till June 1st when draft pick compensation is done and there'll be a feeding frenzy and every team's going to want to go after him. Try and get him now. Give up your third round pick and the slot money. I know, what do I think? The Phillies are going to land a superstar with their third round pick? Do I think they're going to know, they're going to accurately allocate that third round slot money, bits and pieces, to your first round pick or your fourth round pick or second round, whatever you're going to do with it? If you can get an exclusive negotiating opportunity here with Craig Kimbrell by trying to sign him before the trade compensation goes away, go ahead and do it. Because I think the Phillies need some help. They might need more help than just Craig Kimbrell, but they're going to hopefully get some help soon with David Robertson and Victor Arano, hopefully coming back in a few weeks. That's the hope anyway, and that would go a long way towards this bullpen getting shorn up. And by the way, the Phillies bullpen ERA of 3.95, as I mentioned, fourth best in the National League. The Mets are at 4.41, the Braves at 4.51, the Nationals 7.02. If anybody needs Craig Kimbrell, it's the Washington Nationals. As for the offense, we saw that Andrew McCutchen had a big series. Gene Segura had a big series. JT Realmuto had an absolutely incredible home run in the game on Thursday. Hit one onto Waveland Avenue, 456 feet, the longest of his career. Gene Segura has the third best OPS among National League shortstops. He's on his way to an all-star game here, kids, if they take three shortstops. At least he should be. But the Phillies really, they left a lot of meat on the bone this week. A lot of scoring opportunities went by the wayside. In the game on Wednesday night, they had a 3-0 lead early against Cole Hamels when they should have blown Cole Hamels' doors off. Hamels only went four innings against his former team. But they let him off the hook. They only scored three runs, but he was in trouble the entire game, and they just couldn't get it done. Eventually, the Cubs overwhelmed Phil's pitchers. They overwhelmed Cole Irvin. Irvin gives up seven runs on a three-run home run, a monster home run by Anthony Rizzo, and then a grand slam by Almora. I called him Almonte again. Alberto Almora with a monster grand slam, and Cole Irvin suffered the loss in the game on Wednesday when the Phillies really should have run out to a big, big lead against Cole Hamels in that ball game, but weren't able to do it. They've hit seven, including the home runs by Realmuto and Segura on Thursday. The Phillies have hit 17 home runs this month. That is second fewest in baseball. Only the Marlins have fewer. And the Phillies have not hit at least a three-run home run since Bryce Harper's grand slam in St. Louis on May 7th. That was 16 days ago, kids. So they're just not hitting for they're hitting with runners in scoring position is okay. They're hitting .251 this month in the month of May with runners in scoring position, but that's just 18th in baseball. Their OPS of .744 is 19th. Their slugging percentage, and this is the big number, their slugging percentage with the runners in scoring position is just .389. That's 23rd in baseball. And their isolated power with runners in scoring position this month, 25th in baseball. They're not hitting for power with runners on. They're not getting those three-run home runs. Frankly, they're not getting many home runs at all. 53 homers this year, 24th in Major League Baseball. So, again, leaving a lot of meat on the bone in this series against Chicago, and they're not going to be able to do that in Milwaukee against the Brewers this week. some interesting decisions being made on the starting rotation coming up here next week. Gabe Kapler announced after the game that they sent Cole Irvin down to AAA before the game and called up Drew Anderson so the Phillies could have a 9-man bullpen for a little while. But when Irvin's turn comes up in the rotation next week, Vince Velasquez or Nick Pivetta will take his spot in the rotation. Gabe Kapler said that after the game on Thursday. They're not sure which one yet, but it will be either Pivetta coming back up from AAA or Velasquez coming off the injured list will start on Tuesday for the Phillies in Irvin's spot. And I'm kind of surprised by that. I thought they'd give Cole Irvin another outing or two. I think it's probably going to be Pivetta. I think it should be Pivetta. And I think that we're seeing Gabe Kapler warming up to the idea of Vince Velasquez in the bullpen. Velasquez said that he expects to jump back into the starting rotation when he's expected to come off the IL here in a couple of days. And Kapler seemed to suggest that that's not a fait accompli, that that's not a sure thing that's going to happen, nor should it be. And Gabe Kapler's right. It should not be. I think most of us are ready for Vince Velasquez in the bullpen, are we not? Show of hands. We ready for this? I think we're there. I think there's no better time, given how shorthanded the bullpen is, that you've got Nick Pivetta, who can come back up from AAA. And Pivetta's been okay at AAA. He's had some great starts. He's had some not-so-great starts down there, kind of like his big league resume. But he's, I think, going to get... I think he should get the start. I think he will get the start. And I think Vince Velasquez should move to the bullpen for the foreseeable future. And I am surprised that they didn't give Irvin just a little bit more time. He pitched well in his first two starts, even though he did get blitzed in his start on Wednesday. But Irvin sent down to AAA, and Vince Velasquez or Nick Pivetta will get his spot in the rotation. Finally, before we get to Paul Boyer here, let's talk a little bit about Nick Williams. And it really is kind of a sad situation, what Nick Williams had to deal with this year. He obviously didn't blow anyone's doors off last year in his first full season in the big leagues. He had .256, which is not great. .324 on base, not great. Okay, not great. .425 sluggings, low slugging percentage with 17 home runs and 448 plate appearances. Had a weighted runs created of 103, which is just barely above the league average as far as being a run producer is concerned. He didn't force the Phillies not to go sign Andrew McCutchen and Bryce Harper this offseason. And when both of those guys were signed, there simply was no place left for Nick Williams. And so he got sent down to AAA. Surprisingly, I thought they were going to send down Phil Gosselin or Sean Rodriguez, but instead it was Nick Williams who got sent down because clearly being a bench player was not working for him. Not getting any starts until late April was not working for him. Being a pinch hitter when you're not seeing the field at all wasn't working for him. And that's why young guys typically don't play bench roles. You normally go after veteran players who know how to handle stuff like this. And he was lost in a numbers game and just never was able to adjust to being a part-time bench player. He hit .180 this year, .231, .262. He only walked 3.1% of the time, struck out 27.7% of the time. And he obviously didn't agree with being demoted. He spent 3 days at home before reporting on time at Lehigh Valley. He said, "I felt like in my mind you have to earn AAA. It's just weird, especially with a lot of people struggling." Clearly, this is a frustrated kid, man. I mean, and I feel for him. He comes into the season knowing that his playing time is going to be restricted or reduced. But at the same time, he did not have a great season last year. He didn't make everybody say, "Oh, we got to keep a spot for Nick Williams. He's our young star." And he couldn't play center field. If he could play center field, Nick Williams would still be on this team. So what Nick Williams needs to do is go down to AAA with a good attitude, and I think he will, and play his butt off so that the Phillies can trade him someplace where he'll get some playing time. There are outfield needy teams in baseball. The San Francisco Giants, the Miami Marlins, heck, the New York Mets are outfield needy. I really hope Nick Williams is able to land someplace where he'll get an opportunity, but I don't think we're looking at a star player here. I mean, he's limited in what he can do defensively, so he doesn't provide much value there, and we haven't seen enough consistent power from him to really think that he can be a corner outfielder. But again, still super young. Doesn't have much time under his belt. He needs to develop and grow in an outfield someplace. And hopefully by hitting well in Lehigh Valley, he'll get that chance at some point here over the next couple of weeks or months. Well, up next, we're going to talk to Paul Boyer from The Good Fight. We're going to chat about the Phils Cubs series. And we'll talk about a couple other things going on around the Phils. That's up next right here on Hittin' Season. And joining me to break down this series against the Cubs, and specifically the game here on Thursday afternoon, as we're recording just a couple of hours after the completion of the series finale, is Paul Boyer from The Good Fight. You can follow him on Twitter at Paul_Boyer, and Paul also handles our Good Fight Twitter feed, and that's at The Good Fight. Paul does some fantastic work for us at The Good Fight. Paul, how are you, buddy? It's good to talk to you again. Welcome back to Hitting Season.
Hello. Good evening to you. I am still coming down off of the shakes that the end of that game gave me, if I'm being totally honest with you. In a good way, though.
Like, yeah,
didn't that feel,
thankfully.
Didn't it feel like a playoff series, kind of?
It did. It had that feel. I know a lot of people are saying this would make a great playoff series at the end of the year, and it absolutely would. I mean, three night games in Wrigley Field, for whatever reason, night games between good teams in Wrigley Field always have the feel of playoff games, and this series certainly did. And I spent the first part of the podcast talking about some of the things that drove me crazy this series. But, you know, I think as we take a step back and we think about it from a Cubs perspective, if you looked at this series and you looked at how the Phillies played the Cubs, if you're a Chicago fan, you have to be just as happy to be done with the Phillies as I think the Phillies are happy to be done with the Cubs, because the Phillies really should have won 3 out of 4 in this series and very easily could have split the series given the 3-0 lead they had in the game on Wednesday night. So I think it would help if people kind of took a step back and thought, as a Cubs fan, this Phillies team is a pretty tough team.
Yeah, and I think that's what you want to see. You know, we had a glimpse of something like this last year during last year's quick two-game series in Fenway against the Red Sox, where the Phillies and the Red Sox split, and in the game they lost, they really hung in there, and they were close games, and you could kind of feel that something was going on there, and something felt like, you know, the Phillies were a team that belonged in that moment. And you look at the series that they just played, you know, 4 games in Wrigley, the Cubs are really good. You know, they didn't have Baez for, you know, most of a couple of games, trying to rest him up. But they were really even. And I think that's what you want. You know, it wasn't perfect. It wasn't necessarily pretty. The Phillies didn't really come out and assert themselves all that much, except for today. I mean, they hit John Lester around pretty good.
That was good to see. Mm-hmm. Against the left-hander, they've really struggled against left-handers, and Lester's been a very good left-hander this year.
Yeah, that was good to see. So they came in there, and they certainly didn't get embarrassed. They didn't get laughed out of the park. They hung in there. They get a split against one of the best teams in the league. It's hard to really be too upset with it, even though you could argue that, yeah, they probably could have pulled another one out. But, hey, I'll take 2-2 in Wrigley any day.
Yeah, I mean, the Phillies left – I was using this phrase all week because it really feels like it's apropos. They left a lot of meat on the bone in this series, a lot of runners on base. You know, they had opportunities to break some games open and weren't able to do that. And that was actually kind of the case, even though they scored a bunch of runs here in the game on Thursday afternoon. They still left a bunch of runners on base. It was something like, I think, 2-for-12 with runners in scoring position, something like that. And, you know, the other thing that people are talking about, and the reason why this series was so frustrating, is they could have done better. They could have won 3 out of 4, and I think people are upset at the way Gabe Kapler handled the pitching staff this week. I really think Kapler has done a terrific job this season up until this series, and it felt like he was overmanaging this series, which he did some of that last year, some of the overmanaging that we saw in his rookie season as a manager, and it felt like taking Aaron Nola out of the game when he did here on Thursday afternoon was a little bit too soon. I know that Nola wasn't looking his very, very best, but I thought, given all of the issues that the Phillies had with the bullpen this week and having a limited number of relievers available, that he went to the bullpen a little bit too soon today. And as a result, he had to burn through 5 relief pitchers in a game that they led by 5 runs, or was it by 6 runs at the time that Aaron Nola came out? That's not something that can happen. And so I just want to get your thoughts on how you think Gabe Kapler handled the pitching staff overall this week, given everything that went on with Pat Neshek and all that other stuff.
I honestly am okay with it. I know managing relievers is kind of a tricky task, and I don't really know all of the stuff that's going on with the Neshek saga. I think that's a little strange. I'm player sympathetic, and if he feels as though that he wasn't ready to go, then okay, don't make him pitch through pain or whatever. But we can't really speak to that. I think he's been fine. You know, pulling Nola a little early today, yeah, you know, I could have gone either way with that. I think going through three relievers as quickly as he had to or did with Morgan and Sir Anthony and,
yeah,
you know, Neshek being unable to really complete an inning, that was a little hairy. And I think at that point, I really started to question if they were going to hold on, because, I mean, this bullpen is kind of gassed, and they still have to play in Milwaukee now they get their next off day.
Yeah.
I think he's doing the best he can with a short deck. You know, he's missing some really impactful guys right now. You can't excuse everything, but you'd look at a guy like the David Robertson they were expecting to have being out. You look at Victor Arano, who, you know, reemerged from the minor leagues looking fantastic. And you even think about Tommy Hunter a little bit. I mean, I know people aren't really inclined to miss him so much right now.
Right.
But he probably gives you more than someone like Drew Anderson or Aniel De Los Santos would give you.
Or Juan Nicasio. I mean, yeah.
Or Juan Nicasio, yeah. So, like, he's doing fine with what he has. He needs a little bit more help. He needs a better weapon to use. There's something missing there. You can rotate these guys who are on options, you know, in and out. You know, you can bring Anderson up and down and De Los Santos and do all this stuff. That's fine. There's too many chances. I don't know if that answer is Craig Kimbrel. I don't think he is the answer with a capital T and capital A. But it's incomplete. It's incomplete. And I think he's doing the best he can with what he's got.
And Robertson and Hunter could be back before the All-Star break. Kapler said that a couple of weeks ago, that they're making progress, and they could be back before the All-Star break, which would definitely go a long way. As we saw with Patton Neshek last year, he missed the first half of the season and came back and pitched well. But as far as Neshek is concerned, he's really ticked everybody off. I think that, you know, listening to a bunch of the beat writers talk about it, it's not fans overreacting to Pat Neshek. The team isn't sure what's going on with Pat Neshek. It seems as though, you know, there are some thoughts, at least among the beat writers, and some thoughts, I think, among some of the... I really wonder if you gave the players and some of the coaching staff truth serum, what they would say about Pat Neshek at this point. Because, you know, I'm like you. I don't want a guy to go out there hurt. I don't want a guy to go out there before he's ready. And I think Kapler didn't give Neshek enough time to warm up in the game on Monday. Or I'm getting the games all mixed up. Yeah, the game on Monday. And for him not to be available then on Tuesday after only warming up in the bullpen, when he'd only had three appearances since I think it was May 4th, I can understand why fans are a little annoyed at that, why fans are a little upset with that. And I think that... that's not something that's lost on the beat writers who I've heard talking about it and the team itself. We don't know, but, you know, I think I read his comments, you know, in the wake of what Gabe Kapler had to say, and things are not syncing up. These guys are not on the same page. They're not on the same wavelength. And I don't know. I know Gabe Kapler on the WIP morning show this week said that he's the one who makes the decision regarding Pat Neshek. It's not Neshek saying I'm not going to pitch or I can't pitch, but there's some disconnect between what Neshek said after Monday night and what Kapler said. And I wonder, you know, especially given the outing that he had on Thursday, this is not going well. He's trending in the wrong direction here as far as Philadelphia popularity is concerned. And obviously he can get back on the right track if he pitches better. But I don't know. The whole Neshek thing is kind of driving everybody crazy, Paul.
Yeah, you know, I think two things can be true here. I think it can be true that he can know his own availability, and it's good that he's at least talking with the coaching staff, I guess, is what I gather is happening here. And he's letting them know when he's good to go or not good to go. I think that's good, but it can still be a problem that his availability is so limited, right? Especially when he's a guy who will pitch at absolute most one inning. So you can throw a 9-man bullpen out there for a game at a time, I guess. Mm-hmm. You can't run a full season with a 9-man bullpen. And if you have a guy who can only pitch, you know, once every 4 days, 5 days, with the maximum of 13 to 15 pitches, it's great as long as he keeps getting guys out. But other guys have to pick up those outs, especially with starters going, you know, as short into the games as they are. It's something to watch. I don't think it's a crisis. I think it's a little interesting that the words are conflicting and that this has become a story. You don't normally expect to hear about pitcher usage become a story in, you know, in May. But I think it's really something to keep an eye on, because he needs to be effective and he needs to be available. If he's hurt, or if he's sore frequently, that's something the team has to address by picking up another quality arm or somebody else who can pick up these outs, help pick up the slack. Because if he's more restricted than a normal reliever, the guys they have around him right now maybe aren't quite built to pick up that slack. It's just, it's something to watch. I think it's another reason why they need to address this before the end of July. But, you know, I guess we'll see how the next month and a half shakes out.
It's crazy that, I mean, we've criticized Kapler for having too many relievers at times, an 8-man bullpen and a short bench, and they're still running out of relief pitchers, you know?
Right,
It's just crazy to me. So we'll see what happens here over the next few days or so. Kapler did announce after the game that either Velasquez or Pivetta will start in place of Cole Irvin next week. So they won't just decide to skip the number five starter. They are going to give Nola an extra day of rest, which also kind of makes the, I mentioned this before too, makes the decision to pull him a little bit early questionable as well, if they're going to end up giving him the extra day of rest over the next week here. But it looks like that either Velasquez or Pivetta will get the start in place of Cole Irvin. Which one would you prefer, my friend?
Oof. Tricky.
I know.
I would rather Velasquez right now. I don't think Irvin is quite there yet. I think he needs a little je ne sais quoi with his stuff. You know, if he's a guy who's only going to throw 86, 87, he needs to locate a little bit better than he did in his start against the Cubs. I'm glad his first two starts went pretty well, all things considered. But when you have a playoff caliber team with that kind of offense and you have that kind of showing, I know it's only a third career start, so I'll cut him some slack here. That's not what you want to see. You don't want to see a guy give up grand slams. You don't want to see a guy give up meatball home runs to someone he has the platoon advantage on. At the same time, Vinny at this point has given us his share of frustrations over the last few years. I like his ability to strike guys out, but he struggles with other things. I don't really know what to say other than I hope whoever they go with, whether it's Velasquez, whether it's Irvin, whether it's Pivetta, that they just have a nice showing, that they have a bounce back, because all three of those guys could use a bounce back.
They could, and I think, you know, the decision between Pivetta and Velasquez at this point is an interesting one. Do you bring Pivetta back from AAA? He's had some good starts, but he's looked like Nick Pivetta in AAA. Some really good starts and some starts where you're like, what the hell was that? Or Velasquez, who I think, you know, we all know what we've seen from Velasquez. Velasquez has a longer track record, so for me, I think I'd rather see Pivetta in there just because I feel like I know more what Velasquez is as opposed to Pivetta at this point. I'm going to ask you to make another choice here. We saw a good series from some of the basically three of the new additions that the Phillies made on offense this week over the winter. Gene Segura, Andrew McCutchen, and JT Realmuto all had a very good series in Chicago. So far for you, what has been the best acquisition of the three so far this year? Which has been the most impactful here so far this season between Segura, McCutchen, or Realmuto?
Now, this is the kind of question I like because it's really tough in a good way. I don't know, man. Flip a three-sided coin. I don't think you can have a wrong pick here. You know, Segura is a multi-hit machine. I think he's had multiple hits in half the games he's played. Touch is on fire the last week and a half. And even when he was struggling, he was still getting on base and working, you know, tough at bats. Realmuto has not had the offensive kick that we thought he might get moving out of Florida.
It's coming, though.
But yeah, it went on to Waveland. I think that qualifies as, you know, having a little bit of pop. But even though he hasn't been, you know, an offensive explosion, he's been great on defense. We can see that this guy has really one of the fastest transitions from glove to hand that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's lightning in a bottle. So even if he hasn't been an offensive powerhouse, his defense has just been, it's been fantastic. I don't know who I would pick. Got to my head, you could say. Honestly, I might lean Segura.
I can see. I was asked this question when I was on the WIP morning show this week, and I went with Realmuto, but it was, a coin toss. You know what I mean? And after,
yeah.
You know, one guy has a hot week, the other guy has a slower week, the answer changes. But and not to be lost is McCutchen he's on fire right now, too, at the top of the lineup, so. We're all waiting for Rhys Hoskins, though, to kind of get himself going again. And, you know, to the day that I wrote a piece talking about it was great how consistent Rhys Hoskins has been this year, he goes into a tailspin. What is it about the month of May, Paul, that just he just can't seem to get anything going in the month in any month of May, man?
You know, the thing that's emerging with Rhys, and you accept this because his hot streaks are so unimaginably hot, is he himself is a streaky hitter. He goes through these things. I mean, we saw him on a hot streak when he first came up. He cooled off toward the very end of that year. He had a whole season of peaks and valleys in 2018. Now he's doing it again in 2019. The good news is that he's never out of an at-bat, right? He's going to go up there. He's going to foul some pitches off. He so rarely has a plate appearance that doesn't last five, six, seven pitches. And that's what you want, right? You don't want a guy who's going to go up there and stare at hittable pitches because he couldn't time it right or because he couldn't see it out of the hand. You don't want a guy who's just going up there flailing and missing because you know he's not seeing the ball well and he's trying to hit himself out of this slump. He's still going up there with his approach. He's still going up there putting together good PAs. He's not getting some hits to drop. That's a shame, but we know the hits are there. We know the power is there. We know the ability to draw the walk is there. We just might be subjected to this sometimes where he goes through three-week stretches where hits just don't seem like they're falling. That might be the kind of player he is. And you know what? In the end, he's still a really good player, even with all that.
Yeah, he's a good player with all that. But it is frustrating because he looks lost at the plate. When he's slumping, he looks like he doesn't have... He's lunging at everything. And he's aside from the walks that he generates, which is still... He had a good series as far as drawing walks are concerned. But the pop-up with the bases loaded in the eighth inning on Thursday was one of those frustrating at-bats where you just think, man... You know, I mean, when he's hot, he's no more dangerous a guy at the plate in that kind of a situation. But when he's not, it's almost an automatic out because he just doesn't seem he's guessing and doesn't seem to know what's coming most of the time.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, I mean, but it's, you know, again, overall, the overall picture is he's a pretty good baseball player. Last thing for you here, Paul, did the Phillies do Nick Williams dirty?
No, I think Nick Williams was a victim of the business of baseball and the business of baseball. In many aspects, can be pretty cruel sometimes. It's just unfortunate that a guy who spent all last season being a starter, regular playing time, having a pretty good year, and even when he did come off the bench, was fantastic off the bench, got supplanted by two former MVPs in a single offseason. I mean, what are you going to do about that?
Yeah.
You know, the Phillies realized last year that they took a big step toward contending, but weren't quite there. And this winter, they found two players who could push them farther than Williams could. They got Andrew McCutchen as a free agent. They got Bryce Harper as a free agent. And both of those guys are better players than Nick Williams. They tried to play Nick as a late-inning specialist just off the bench. Apparently, that doesn't quite work with his rhythms. He worked better as a pinch hitter when he had been coming off of starting, getting more regular time. You just can't really sit Kutch and Harper. You just can't. And if he's not going to be able to work in the flow of a game as a late inning pinch hitter and put together better ABs and, you know, even his body language toward the end, you know, shortly before his optioning, you could tell that the dude was not feeling it. He was bumming. And I can't really blame him. You know, this season was certainly not what he was expecting it would be last September. So, the team has reached this point now where it's even more critical than ever to balance winning with development, right? And we're tipping the scales way more toward winning at this point. The development period is much, much shorter than it was at the major league level. And if you're not going to perform, things like this are going to happen, you know?
Yep.
We saw it with Pivetta, right? You know, in another year, Nick Pivetta, they would have just kept riding him and had him fix it at the major league level. Can't do that right now. This team is in a division race. And if Nick Williams isn't going to be able to come off the bench as a left-handed bat and get hits, put together better at-bats, well, things like this are going to happen. And all you can do is hope he goes to Lehigh Valley, gets his head on straight. Hopefully the couple of days he took in Texas lets him take a breather, separate himself from the game, relax a little bit, then come back and start hitting the cover off the ball. Make this team understand that they made a mistake, right? Prove them wrong. Show them that you are the piece that we all thought he could be at the end of 2017 and during parts of 2018, and come back strong. even if it means the Phillies have to trade him,
yeah.
right, or can trade him, they can't right now. It just doesn't make sense.
No.
But even if it means they have to trade him, it's better for him in the end, right? So he'll go somewhere where he can start, and then the Phillies can get a better player out of it. And that's the worst case scenario that we should be rooting for.
Yeah, and
right?
I was going to say, exactly, and I think that's what Nick wants too. I don't think Nick would be opposed to going someplace else at this point.
No, I don't really blame him. You know, he doesn't really have a place here anymore. He's not going to start for at least 3 years. He can't play center field. Doesn't make sense as a first baseman, even if you could find, you know, a spot for Reese if the DH came in next year. Like, he's getting squeezed out. And I think at this point, it's just better for him to try and rebuild some of the value he's lost.
Well, hopefully he'll be able to do that down in Lehigh Valley, because I think there is talent there, but it hasn't broken through for long enough stretches in order for Nick to really force the issue and make the Phillies keep him around. So hopefully he'll go down to AAA and rake, and maybe the Phillies can use him in a deal for a relief pitcher at some point this summer, or a starting pitcher or something. Find a home for Nick Williams where he can play every day, because it's pretty clear that's what needs to happen. Well, listen, folks, if you do not know Paul Boyer's stuff from The Good Fight, make sure you check out thegoodfight.com and read anything with Paul's byline on it. Excellent work he does for us. He's also in charge of our Twitter account at The Good Fight. You can follow Paul on his personal account at Paul_Boyer. Paul, thanks for coming back on Hitting Season, buddy.
John, pleasure as always. Thanks so much.
Well, up next, we're going to take a look around the National League East, and I'll have your stat of the week coming up here also in just a few minutes. That's up next right here on Hitting Season. And we're back on Hitting Season. So while the Phillies split their series with the Chicago Cubs this week, some National League East teams had some very good weeks, and one National League East team had a very, very bad week. Let's start off with the very, very bad. The Washington Nationals, guys, are an unmitigated disaster. They suffered a four-game sweep at the hands of the Mets in New York. The Nationals now 12 games under 500, and they are 10 games back in the National League East. They have the same number of losses this season as the Marlins, who, by the way, have won five in a row. It's unbelievable what's going on in Washington. We thought the Nationals were going to be this team's top competition coming into the season, and now there are articles on MLB.com by Mark Feinsand writing about five possible teams that could be trade fits for Anthony Rendon. I mean, we're talking about Rendon is probably going to get traded at this point. Sean Doolittle is probably going to get traded at this point. Anything decent is probably going to get traded at this point. And Feinsand wrote the Phillies are among the teams that could be trade fits for Anthony Rendon, and that's mostly because the Phillies have a need there. With Michael Franco not impressing, Rendon has an .874 career OPS in 51 games at Citizens Bank Park, but can you really see the Nationals trading Anthony Rendon to the Phillies and what it would take to give up to get him? What the Phillies would have to give the Nationals to get Anthony Rendon, even for half a season or for a third of a season? I don't think the Phillies are going to meet that price, and I don't think the Nationals want to send Rendon to a team within the division, especially the Phillies, who just grabbed Bryce Harper. Can you imagine signing Bryce Harper as a free agent away from the Nationals and then getting the Nationals' next best player, Anthony Rendon, just a couple of months later? So no, I don't see that at all, but I do think we're looking at a situation where unless they get on a winning streak that is unforeseeable at this point with a bullpen with an ERA over 7, and an inconsistent offense that can't seem to stay healthy, and a manager that can't seem to get out of his own way, I don't see how the Nationals are anything other than sellers at the trade deadline. Shocking. Just absolutely shocking what's going on in the nation's capital. When they fired Dusty Baker, they shut the window on their own time to contend. It's unbelievable. When you look at the moves that were made over the last 5 years by all of Major League Baseball, is that the worst move made by any team in baseball over the last 5 years? I can't think of one that was worse than that. What a huge bungle. And this is not all Dave Martinez's fault, but Dusty Baker knew how to win baseball games. I don't know what it is. He's not an analytics guy. He's not a new age guy, but Dusty Baker, until the day he was fired from the Nationals, knew how to win baseball games. That's a team that has forgotten how to win baseball games. And I'm fine with it. I'm not asking them to make any changes. Keep Davey Martinez. Keep everything in place.
10 games behind the Phillies right now in the National League East. But the Mets, of course, they benefited from the Nationals' suckitude. They won four straight and are now just four and a half games behind the Phillies in the National League East. Mickey Callaway's job, which seemed like it was in jeopardy at the start of the week, looking much better now. Now, they have lost Yoenis Cespedes, it looks like for the season, after a fall at his ranch fractured his ankle in multiple places. I mean, you talk about the most Mets thing ever. That was completely a Mets thing. But they bounced back this week in impressive fashion, and we've seen the Phillies struggle against the Mets. We know that they have a pretty decent offense. We know that Jacob deGrom, who has struggled like Nola this year has. By the way, the top three vote-getters in the Cy Young this last year are all having their difficulties. DeGrom, Scherzer, and Nola are all having difficulties this year. It has not been a repeat of 2018 for those guys. But DeGrom has had a little bit of an issue. Syndergaard has been good. And then Zach Wheeler's been pretty good. So we know the Mets are a decent team. But the team that I'm really scared of is the Atlanta Braves. And right now, if you offered me the option to trade rosters, I think I would probably trade rosters with the Atlanta Braves right now. I don't know. I mean, it's tricky. The Phillies have, I think, a slightly, well, here's the deal. Austin Riley is a wild card with Atlanta. The new third baseman was just called up from the minors, one of their top prospects, has 5 home runs in his first 9 games. He's been absolutely unbelievable. They also have an outstanding young starter in Max Fried, 7-2 on the season now, 2.88 ERA, 1.12 whip, 51 strikeouts and 56 and a third innings pitched. They have Ronald Acuna, they have Ozzie Albies, they have Freddie Freeman, Nick Markakis is still ripping the cover off the ball. Now you're going to put Austin Riley into the mix? Come on, man. That's not right. Yes, that's not right, but I mean, the starting rotation leaves a lot to be desired, but hey, doesn't the Phillies pitching staff leave something to be desired right now? I mean, do you feel great about Jake Arrieta? Do you feel better about Jake Arrieta than Julio Teheran? Would you rather have Max Fried right now or any of the Phillies' young pitchers? You know, I think there's a case to be made that the Braves have more talent than the Phillies do right now. That's my worry, is that the Braves have more talent than the Phillies do right now, especially if Austin Riley continues to do what he's doing. I think that's the key. If Austin Riley turns into an impact hitter in the middle of that lineup, good night. Boy, oh boy. The Braves now just 1.5 games behind the Phils. It is neck and neck in the National League East, and the Phillies really need to get some consistency. Rhys Hoskins has been brutal in the month of May. Bryce Harper has shown some signs that he's coming out of it. I think, you know, he's emerging from the funk that he was in. I think over his last 6 or 7 games, he's hit very well. This is about what you would expect from Harper. But Rhys Hoskins' slump has come at a terrible time. And when he slumps, man, he doesn't, as I mentioned with Paul, he doesn't fool around. When Rhys Hoskins slumps, he's an automatic out. He'll walk. But right now they have Rhys Hoskins, Odubel Herrera, and Michael Franco are all automatic outs in that lineup. Scott Kingery came back this week, and that's good to see. And you know, if Scott Kingery turns into a really good young ball player, well, then maybe you look at the Phillies as being the more talented team. But right now, I think it's neck and neck. I think it's a coin flip. Who has the more talented roster right now, the Phillies or the Braves? The Phillies have the lead in the division, but who knows for how much longer, especially as they get ready for a 3-game series against the Brewers in Milwaukee. And for that series, here are the pitching matchups. Jared Eichhoff will try to bounce back from a couple of shaky starts. He's allowed 9 runs over his last 2 starts with a 6.55 ERA and 4 career starts against the Brewers. He'll go up against Chase Anderson, who is a 2.66 ERA. He's making just his 2nd start after coming off the 10-day injured list. He threw just 76 pitches in Atlanta in his return to action last weekend. He's allowed 2 earned runs in 13 2/3 innings since joining Milwaukee's rotation. So that's the right-hander the Phillies will be facing, the 2 young right-handers going at it. In the game on Saturday afternoon, Jake Arrieta will go up against Julius Chacin. Arrieta with a 3.77 ERA, Chacin 4.65 ERA, but you know, the Phillies made all of the Milwaukee starters look pretty good last week. So don't let that 4.65 ERA fool you. And then in the game on Sunday afternoon, the Phillies' best pitcher this year, Zach Eflin, who has allowed one run or fewer in four of his last five starts. He gave up just one run over six innings with six hits and four walks his last time out against the Cubs. He'll go up against Brandon Woodruff, who's 6-1 with a 3.51 ERA. His last outing was an eight-inning outing against the Braves, which he was throwing 96 miles an hour into the eighth inning. The Phillies better be ready to swing the bats against Brandon Woodruff because he is going to bring the heat. And then the Phillies return home for a series against the Cardinals and the Dodgers as this gauntlet continues. And so far, the Phillies are playing about 500 baseball, which is what we said they needed to do in order to get through this mess. But so far, so good after a four-game split with the Chicago Cubs. All right, time for your stat of the week. According to the Elias Sports Bureau, the Phillies' 10 losses when leading in the ninth inning or later, going back to the start of last season, and that includes Tuesday's defeat in Chicago when they blew a 2-1 lead in the ninth inning, are the most in baseball since the start of the 2018 season. The 10 losses when leading in the ninth inning or later. Absolutely awful. Folks, that'll do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Paul Boyer for coming on the podcast. Once again, folks, make sure to check out the Hittin' Season Patreon by going to patreon.com/hittin'season and signing up on the $5 a month tier. You'll get a bunch of bonus stuff doing that. And don't forget to leave a 5-star rating and a review at the Good Fight podcast feed on Apple Podcasts. Tell your friends about the podcast if they're Phillies fans and they don't know about us. Grab their phone and put us on it so they can hear Hittin' Season, Continued Success, and The Dirty Inning each and every time a new episode is ready to go. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you all next time right here on Hittin' Season.